Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. Okay, so we got store news as usual this weekend. We've been promoting this for a while, but it is Wizard World. We will be down at Wizard World on October 30th and 31st.
Yep.
And up here at the store on October 31st on Halloween, Nick will be the Impresario of Halloween Comic Fest.
And I may or may not be in a costume. We'll see.
I will be wearing a cheap Central City Forensics knockoff costume.
That is not a knockoff costume. That is like you're one of the only people to have that.
It's pretty cheap. Medallion. I have a t-shirt and a badge. That's it.
I'm just saying that badge is pretty awesome.
That badge is pretty awesome.
That's true, actually.
Which we will have in store at some point, but soon. Randy just got it early.
I got it early.
I'll be wearing jeans and a t-shirt. Might or might not have superhero logo picture on it.
Maybe a cape.
Yeah, it's possible. lost my train of thought. I was going to ask something. Oh, right. At the convention, what times will we be there for people who are coming down to visit? I mean, is it
presumably the whole time.
So, unless
nobody comes, in which case we'll get out of there early and go get food.
Right. But like sort of, what time does the con open?
It opens at 10.
It opens on Friday. It opens at 11 and runs till 8. On Saturday, it opens at 10 and runs till 7. And our plan is to be there the whole time, like I say, unless it's quiet, in which case we'll duck out early and go get food.
But you should all come visit us. It'll be a big bumpin' house party.
Yep. We got our section. There's a post on our website about sort of what we're doing to have. We're going to have the bargain bins. So if you like those bargain bins we do, comic books, 3 for $1. Yep. We'll have that. We'll have a discount on Secret Wars back issues, not the main series, but all the tie-ins.
Uh-huh.
We will have a raffle going where basically you spend $25 at the store or at the booth. You get a ticket for a raffle to get a custom action figure designed by Nick.
Yep.
Within reason.
Yes.
He is not going to build you a Fin Fang Foom.
I don't even have a Fin Fang Foom.
but yeah, so there'll be some extra bonus stuff. And then if you can't make it down to the convention, come up here and get free comics.
It's true.
It's a good weekend.
Yeah. There's a lot of good free comics, and it should be a lot of fun. We'll also probably have some candy to give out.
Yeah.
Show up in your costume. We love that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's Halloween. Dress up, people.
Yeah. If you
don't be a Dave.
Yeah, that was mean.
I like it, Randy.
Nick, you know what figure you should make sometime? You should make a cool puck figure. Have they made a decent one?
No, but I actually have plans for a puck.
Nobody knows who Puck is, right?
Not
everyone should know.
From Alpha Flight?
Say, anybody who's over 30 knows who Puck is.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
If they're under 30, they know nothing.
They wonder why we're obsessed with hockey. all right, so then moving on into November, we've got our Reading with Rogues. We're going to be doing Top 10. We are going to be doing Sushi Nini, and that is going to be on Tuesday, November 10th, unless we don't get a lot of people chiming in because it is, of course, holiday month,
yep.
In which case we'll probably just skip. But you can still get the book for 15% off, and we recommend it because it's really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or you can get it for 25% off if you have a Rogue card.
It's true.
Gaming with Rogues this month is going to be special. We're not going to do it off-site. We're going to do it here at the store.
Right.
On Saturday, November 14th, starting at 6 p.m., running until we close at 9, the official game of choice is Guillotine, the game of trying not to get your head chopped off.
Yep.
Card game, a lot of fun.
Yep. It's funny. This is a game that I have not played, but have in the whole time since I've been working here, including when we used to be Dragon Slayer and stuff like that, I had always heard super fun party game.
Yeah.
Have you played it, Randy?
I have not played it either.
We're guillotineless.
Yes, we're guillotineless. Yes. Like modern-day France.
Yes.
But not like the Renaissance France.
Correct.
Or maybe not the Renaissance. I don't know.
Somewhere between modern-day and the Renaissance, people got guillotined.
Yeah.
That's what we know.
This is what we learned in American history class.
It was in Napoleon times.
And by that, I don't mean American history.
Or
I mean
later. I can't remember.
I mean the history they teach in American schools.
I'm not saying a word.
Anyway, that's going to be guillotined. But also, you can play other games if you'd like. We do have our board game library. And you're welcome to come out and just play some games on that Saturday.
Yeah, that's true. There's
a plethora.
A host of games.
A plethora.
Plethora.
Yes,
fun.
Yes, you've all seen the movie.
And anyway, Guillotine, of course, you have your Rogue card and get 10% off on that this month.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're doing a demo of a new game called Snow Tales. The company reached out to us, and they have a rep in the area who's going to come out and demo it. It is a dog sled racing game.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Looks like a lot of fun, and is getting really good reviews on Board Game Geek, I believe.
Is it by chance, I don't know if this particularly matters for purposes of demo, but is it like an all-ages kind of game?
I don't know off the top of my head. I think
it sounds like a concept that could be, but not necessarily.
No, I think it's probably more in the Formula D kind of
vein. Yeah, yeah.
So. It's a very dark board game.
Of dog sled racing.
Dog sled racing and freezing to death.
Dogs against humanity.
It is going to be Sunday, November 15th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., assuming it runs that long. So come out and try that game out for free. And then on November 21st, that next Sunday, from 1:30 to 5:30, we are demoing, we're doing a demo slash tournament of the card game Epic, which is the guys who did Star Realms, which is a really fun sort of deck building game. Epic is their fantasy version, and basically it comes with, each deck you buy comes with four different sort of color decks, kind of like Magic. Mm-hmm. And what you're going to get to play the demo is you pay $5, you get a 30-card deck, you play that in three rounds, and then there will be bonus cards you win, and bonus tournament, you know, prizes if you win the round, or if you get the sort of fellowship prize. Mm-hmm. And for that $5, you will walk away with a 30-card deck and some bonus cards.
That's pretty cool.
And should be a lot of fun. We've got one of my friends coming up who is a big Epic fan. I played this in my board game night and really liked it. If you like Magic but don't want to spend as much money on Magic, Epic is complete in the box at $14.99 and has enough for four players. And you can add another deck and get up to eight players. So that should be a lot of fun. All the info on all of this stuff, as always, is on our website and on our Facebook. Please chime in, especially if you're going to come and you know you're coming. Chime in on Facebook so we have a sense of the crowd. That always helps us.
Yep. Tell your card-loving friends about it.
Yeah. And speaking of membership cards, Dave, you ran a cool thing for members this week.
Yeah, yeah. This was we had a very fun and successful sort of first outing of the sort of gaming with the management. I don't know if we have a certain title for this
little segment. Nope, no title.
But for those who have rogue cards, Rainy and I are, a couple times a year going to run some games run a role-playing game, you're probably in the store.
Yep.
Our first test outing was the game Dread, the horror-based role-playing game that uses a Jenga tower to resolve everything, and when it collapses, terrible things happen. Yep.
We've talked about this on the podcast, and I did a podcast for my RPG podcast with it.
I had a full house for it of six people. I was mildly saddened that I only killed one of them off, but we had a very dramatic ending where it was like shaky as hell. this adventure took place entirely on a school campus, and all the players were very sort of high school types, which everybody seemed to have a lot of fun with. There was a creature loose on the campus. They went in there to try and figure out what it was. It was thought to be a ghost. But was revealed, in fact, to be a sort of goblin.
Yes, because Dave has determined this is the year of the goblin.
Yep, there's that phrase, ghosts and goblins, but when do the goblins ever get their due?
You're never. The goblin.
Now they got it.
You're the goblin.
But yeah, it was cool. Jose, one of our customers and friend and he's run demos and stuff for us, who had previously played Dread with me, as before, died.
Yep.
He joked that he was the token minority.
Oh, that's just wrong.
That was the will of the Jenga.
Yes.
Anyway, everybody had a ton of fun, and I was very happy with the group. So thank you to the group for being such awesome players. And I look forward to running. We're going to do different games each time. So we'll probably do Dread again at some point. But I'm not sure what's next.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Do you know what you're going to run at all?
I haven't decided. I mean, I may just do Fiasco for people who haven't played it. That's always fun.
I was telling my group about Fiasco because this was interesting. Out of six people, I think only two have definitively played role playing games.
Yeah.
So Jenga, a Jenga-based system was very easy to get into. They did not have to understand any kind of number crunching stuff, and it worked out well. And Fiasco obviously would be the same kind of thing.
Yeah, but I haven't decided. I'll probably some point run just D&D or something basic like that.
Yeah, I think D&D would be great.
There'll be something coming up next year that'll be that. So if you want in on any of these gaming things, get a rogue card.
Indeed.
And we'll have the perk for November going out on Sunday. We'll send out the newsletter for November perk, so... it is a good time to join. As always, it's a good time to join.
Oh, yeah, and I know what this perk is. It's a good perk.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to actual news for the week. First of all, I want to run down some stuff that came back into the store. Dead of Winter, much-beloved...
after game of, the last 6 months here.
This is a zombie survival game in which you are... It's co-op. You are in a sort of wintry environment, and you're trying to survive five or six rounds as the colony. And you'll have different guys who you play who are your people.
It's like a snowbound survival camp sort of thing.
And sort of the neat thing about it is it's different every time because you have different characters who have different abilities, and you have a different objective. Like, there's a group objective, which changes. There are five or six different ones. Mm-hmm. And then you have a secret objective, which could be either to complete the group objective and have something else. Like, for example, when I played recently, it was repopulation. So in addition to surviving and killing 12 zombies for research purposes, which we had to do, my goal was to have at least 12 survivors so that we could repopulate. We did, so we both group won the game and I won the game.
You were saying you were a zombie pimp?
I was a zombie pimp. And then there's also the betrayal goals, which don't show up in every game, but do show up in some of them. And that is a goal where you want the group to lose, you're secretly working against them, and you want something else to happen.
Does the group know when that option is on the table that there could be a betrayer?
You always know the betrayals are possible.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. And every individual person has their own secret goal?
Yep.
Okay.
This time out, we figured out pretty early as we were playing that there was not a traitor.
Right.
And so we were pretty certain there was no traitor in it. I believe one of the players suspected me for a long time because I kept doing things.
Well, you're shifty.
I am shifty.
When I played Shadows Over Camelot, you were definitely my pick for the betrayer of the Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah, well, I'm shifty.
actually weren't the betrayer.
But at any rate, Dead of Winter is back in. We have, as of right now, 3 copies.
Yep.
We're hoping to have some more from our other distributor. We should have maybe 5 or 6 more. But that is back in. It is a great game. And there is a companion app that they're releasing on Saturday, or on Halloween, actually, which is Saturday, that you can use to track stuff. And it's just an app you buy for Android or iOS. It might be free. I think it's probably like a $2 or $3 app.
Mm-hmm.
But so if you got Dead of Winter, there's an app coming.
I've run into some really handy apps. There's a really good one for Betrayal at House on the Hill, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Since, the little sliders that go on the little cards for
you.
I don't know if you've played it before.
Yeah.
They're not the best of sliders. It's easy for them to fall off and you lose track of what your numbers were.
Yep.
And so there's a cool app for it.
Nice. Also back in today is Mysterium, which is the haunted house game.
Yeah, I wanted to play this. One player plays like the ghost.
Yep.
And the other players are sort of like trying to determine who killed you or something like that, right? I don't know if it's always who killed you or different. But.
Yeah.
And you get clues.
It's sort of a communication game because you're not allowed as the ghost to do much in the way. Like, there's a lot of sort of pantomime and using cards and this kind of stuff.
You can't say Old Man Jenkins killed me.
No.
You have to, lead them down this path to finding him.
And there's a lot of art cards. It
sounds very, very cool.
Sounds like Dixit.
I was going to say, it's a Dixit vibe to it.
Yeah, meets a haunted house.
Yeah, yeah.
Dixit meets Clue.
I've seen a demo copy of it, and it is very cool. It's beautiful production values.
Yeah, I read about it a year ago in some previews because it had hit overseas.
Yeah.
And it was one of the coolest sounding games I've ever read about.
And it was a big hit at Gen Con, and we've been getting it in drips and drabs of one copy at a time.
Yeah.
Well, we have 3 copies in right now, so hopefully that'll keep us for a little bit.
Get them while they're hot.
Also this week, the Red Dragon Inn came in.
Oh, yeah, Red Dragon Inn 5,
yes.
A huge box
Gigantic
set.
Box.
I believe it is simply, they generally are, these are core games, and this one has several new characters.
This one adds characters. This isn't a core game. This one you actually have to buy the main game right?
Is that right? I don't know, honestly.
At any rate, it has 4 characters in it, and the other cool thing is it's a big box where you can put all the other characters. So if you're a Red Dragon Fiend.
That makes sense.
If you're a Red Dragon Fiend and you have all of them, like some of our friends are, like Mr. Steve Carter.
Yep.
You can now have a box that will hold all your character stuff
in
it, which is kind of cool.
And also accompanying that were 3 new just individual character card packs.
Yeah.
So it was a big week for Red Dragon Inn.
Yeah, Red Dragon Inn's a fun game. I don't know if you've ever actually had a chance to play it, but I like
yet.
It.
The packs and stuff look so cool, though, that I really want to play it.
Yeah, it's a fun party-ish game. You played it, Nick?
Yeah, I played it. I played the Magician in one of them, and I immediately got killed out because no one likes the Magician.
But everybody likes his crazy, psychotic, familiar Pookie.
That's true. It's crazy.
And then finally, we got T-shirts back in stock, particularly the DC ones.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a last-minute cheap Halloween costume like I was.
Or just a cool shirt.
There's Flash, Green Lantern, Superman, the new Superman logo from Truth, which is actually a really cool logo.
One of the best ones.
Truth, the T-shirt Superman, basically.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a reverse Flash logo from the TV show.
Uh-huh.
There's, of course, always Gotham City Police, Gotham City SWAT. Arkham Asylum inmate.
Different versions of Batman.
Yeah. So, if you want a T-shirt costume, we got you covered. Finally, there was not a lot of news this week, but a couple things. They announced a new Punisher series coming out next year.
Yes, they did.
Kind of an odd creative team.
Yeah.
Becky. Well, it's not
odd.
One of them
not
is,
odd.
I mean, it's Becky Cloonan writing.
Yeah, and that's the odd part. She's more of an indie person. You don't really think of her as a Punisher. Like,
true.
But I can see her being a Punisher fan.
Is she co-writing Gotham Academy, or am I just making
She's co-writing Gotham Academy, okay. Yes.
And she said the audience of Gotham Academy, who are should not read Punisher.
So yeah. She's not going to be turning it into Gotham to Punisher Academy.
No, it sounds more like Punisher Max.
And the artist is actually someone who's drawn Punisher quite a bit in the past.
That is Steve Dillon.
Who worked extensively with
Garth Ennis
on that, and of course Preacher before that. So he knows from Punisher and from Violence.
Yeah, well, Clunan's take is that this is basically Punisher's like the Michael Myers for criminals.
Yep.
The unstoppable foe who hunts them down, mm-hmm. Which is an interesting take. We'll see how that goes, but that's going to launch next year. And then we finally got, after many teasers, the Jessica Jones trailer.
Right, we did.
Which I loved.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
This showed clips of, I watched it like the other week earlier in the week when it came out, but uh-huh. I'm trying to remember what all it showed. It was a
full 2 minute.
Yeah, it shows her talking with Luke Cage in a bar,
yep.
Which led us to wonder if Luke Cage has powers yet.
Yeah, it's possible.
I feel like he has to, but I don't know. They may change him up notably. But they're definitely going to do a big thing with her and Luke Cage, which makes sense because that was a big part of the book. And they're very much making Kilgrave the overarching villain.
Yeah.
And they made him creepy and scary.
Yeah.
As he is in Alias.
And that's why this trailer, although I'm looking forward to the show, was a little bit bad for me in the sense that arc in the comic was my least favorite arc.
Yeah.
Because that's where it got so, like, kind of creepy, grimy.
Yeah.
But it was sort of integral to the plot, so I mean, I see, and her journey as a character.
Yeah.
So it makes sense, but I was just like, it unfortunately reminded me of the things I didn't like about the comic.
Well, that's interesting.
And also, this is our first real look at what Kristen Ritter is like as Jessica Jones.
She looks great.
Oh, right.
She looks fantastic.
Right. Yeah. They showed, you definitely got that Burnout Case kind of vibe from her. There was one or two scenes directly from the comic, her throwing some dude through her door.
Yep.
And
it also shows her, like, flying.
Shows her lifting a car, shows her using her powers, which is kind of cool.
It is cool.
And certainly a higher level of power than they showed on Daredevil previously. So it's just sort of upping the stakes a little bit from what had been seen.
Also, their Kilgrave take reminds me, it's almost, and maybe because it's Halloween, but it has a horror-y vibe to it. It's like a possessing demon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Shows people like hanging themselves and all that scene in the police station where they're all pointing guns at each other. Yeah. There's some creepy stuff.
For those who don't know, the Kilgrave, aka the Purple Man, as he was called in the earlier comics, and was an old Daredevil villain,
yep, yep.
And Jessica Jones is associated with Daredevil. But he essentially has this like sort of pheromone based power where he gives people commands and they must obey.
Yep.
That's it.
It's definitely, they're taking it to that extreme.
Yeah,
if
they
you can
are
control police stations.
Yep.
But, you know, one of the things that everybody was a little bit worried about, we all thought Kristen Ritter was a good actor, she's very pretty, but would she be able to pull off Jessica Jones? Will she get her toughness, her burned-outedness?
Yeah.
And at least from the trailer, it looks like she's going to get it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
We also saw the woman playing Patsy Walker.
Yeah, just briefly. She's just in a couple of scenes.
And Carrie Ann Moss is in there, too.
Yeah, but just briefly.
We don't know who she is.
We do. We do. Carrie Ann Moss is playing a gender-flipped Jaron Hogarth.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
I don't even know who that is.
He's the lawyer from Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Weird.
He was Danny's friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
And his dad's friend.
Yeah,
she's a PI, and PIs are employed by lawyers all the time, so that's probably her boss, basically, right?
Yep, probably so. But,
kind of cool.
I thought it was a good trailer. I'm looking forward to it. All right, that wraps up news and stuff for this week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. We are talking new comics for the week of Wednesday, October 28th. Nick, what you got?
Oh my God, you're starting with me.
Yep.
Why?
I think next week, Randy, you should start with you.
No.
Shake it out.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be talking about a book that is not Marvel.
What?
Oh my God, that actually, I think, breaks a record.
Actually, I don't think we have any Marvel picks this week except for one of mine.
We're fine. Payback time, Marvel.
That's right.
We hate you now.
Well, I think I've had like a Marvel pick for the past like maybe 7 weeks.
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
But
we looked and we're like, wait, no, it is Marvel.
No, this is actually an Image book.
Yep.
And this is Greg Rucka's new book. Actually, Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott. The book is called Black Magic. I first want to talk about format.
Yeah.
Because there's two different types of ways you can get this book. Well, three if you count digital, but we don't do that. Two, though, there is the regular edition of the book, which goes for, I think, $3.99.
Yeah, it's a standard,
comic. Great comic. And then there is the special magazine edition, which is $2 more, but you get a ton of extra stuff.
And it's oversized.
And it's oversized. It's sort of like what they did for Criminal.
Brubaker's been doing it. Criminal, Fade Out, or the Fade Out did it, I think.
So yes, Rucka was like, I used to write Gotham Central with him. I write crime stuff too. Where's my Biggie magazine?
That's exactly what he said.
But it has.
But probably more petulantly.
It has covers. It's got Nicola Scott's basically sketchbook.
Yeah, her sketches and designs for the characters and sort of that.
An interview with both of them. There's actually like a newspaper
text piece of the comic of the world. Yeah,
yep, and sort of a timeline.
Although that's in the main book too.
Is that in the main book? Yeah. That's pretty important.
But it's not as Biggie sized.
It's not as Biggie sized.
That's correct.
Okay, now that I've talked about format, let's talk about story.
Yes,
Greg Rucka is just one of those guys that if I see his name, I just sort of gravitate to it. Yep. So
you will be shocked to learn there is a strong female protagonist.
Yep,
lead.
A strong. Yes. Dealing, because our main character, is a witch.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very interesting concept to go with. She's
exactly,
also...
Well, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, and to counter that, she's also a police detective.
Yeah, she's not a green-skinned, warty-nosed, flying around on a broom kind of witch.
I was going to say, we don't actually quite know what kind of witch is, other than she's...
They have a ritual at the beginning.
She's part of a coven. We don't know exactly what that is.
I want to say what happens in the beginning. It's kind of funny.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
All right, so there's like a coven thing going on, you know, like a in the woods. What do you call the rituals?
I don't know. It's a ritual.
It's a ritual.
They're chanting.
They're chanting, and
everyone's got cool robes.
Very serious. They're in a forest clearing, and then suddenly somebody's cell phone goes off and they're like, this better be effing important or something like that.
It's got that biting humor a little bit, but it's also
a very serious story
and it's an interesting introduction to this character because we don't know a ton about her, but you know, with just a few little dots of information, she's already interesting.
Did we say what her job is?
She's a cop.
She's a detective. And she gets sort of called into this incident that is occurring at a fast food restaurant that somebody has taken some hostages.
Yeah. We don't want to say too much about it.
I don't want to say too much more, but obviously...
There seems to be a reason she is there.
Yeah, and things are occurring, and I don't know. I just found that the pacing to be really, really good. And Nicola Scott's artwork, which is all black and white.
That's one of the things I wanted to say, is that when I noticed this was black and white, I was a little nervous because that can put people off. It's not really black and white.
No.
It's sort of duotoned. It's sort of sepia toned. Yeah. And there is definitely splashes of color used throughout.
But it's actually done for a purpose.
Yeah.
And I thought that was actually very, very cool.
I thought the aesthetic was really good.
Yeah.
And I just think the story has a lot of possibilities. And sort of seeing where Rucka runs with it. He doesn't usually run like with the usual thing.
Well, Rucka's other image book is Lazarus, which we all love.
Yeah.
He has done any number of straight crime stories before. But this one seems to be at least partially, at least in the first issue, something of a procedural, but with that strange element of witchcraft that, you know, how far it's going to intercede with the real world, we'll find out.
See, I thought this was going to be, when I read the pitch, I thought it was going to be kind of a cult crimes task force or Dresden Files kind of thing, where like
supernatural
cops. But no, she's a cop. Like, this is a cop story.
Yeah.
But with the witch thing is an undercurrent. There's like a supernatural undercurrent that's going on that... Most people don't know about.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, no one knows she's a witch. No one she works with.
Right.
But I will say, you know, one of the things I liked about this was that sense of reality. That the procedural stuff in it is really good. All the cop chatter and what occurs when they get to the place.
Yeah.
It felt really grounded and real.
That's one thing that Rucka always does really well.
Yeah, it was real taut. It's a suspenseful issue.
And also making it very real is Nicola Scott's artwork. I mean, she grounds it in reality.
Yeah.
I mean, her just locations and...
Check out that motorcycle.
That's
an awesome-looking motorcycle.
Am I correct that she has primarily drawn superhero comics?
Yeah, for the most part. Secret Six.
She's a great superhero artist, although she's not often on projects
She started with Secret Six, then she's more recently done... Did she do Earth 2?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, she did a lot of the beginning stuff with Earth 2, and then this is where she's jumped to, and... Her art just gets better and better. I mean, literally everything in here is so detailed. The facial expressions, the sort of... The perspirations of the sort of
the perspiration, yeah.
The criminal that they're
it has something of
with.
A. I mean, it's what I would call a photorealistic art style, but yeah. It's not one of those that looks like it's you know traced from photos.
It's not stiff, yeah.
It's not stiff
overly
at all.
Referenced,
right?
Anyways. Highly recommend this book.
Yeah, I think we all like this one.
I honestly think
that was borderline my pick this week.
The magazine size one is probably the way I would go, just because I think it lets the art breathe a little bit more.
Yep.
But
they're not going to do any more. Like just the first issue
is
magazine
just the first
size.
Issue.
So if format change is going to bother you, probably not a great idea.
Yeah, that's true. But that is my pick. Randy, what you got?
So I am picking a trade this week.
Aha!
And the trade I'm picking is one I've been waiting for since we talked about this first issue way back when, and that is the trade called Shaft, A Complicated Man.
Damn right.
And this is, in fact, 70s P.I. Shaft. This is just after he comes back from, I think, Vietnam. Or no, he's a boxer.
Oh, right. At least... I guess in the first issue, but maybe throughout the whole series,
yep.
It's sort of like his first case, really.
Yeah.
Where he kind of like...
But I think he was in Vietnam.
He was in Vietnam, he was a boxer, and now he's a PI. He falls in love, he runs afoul of some bad guys, and it is a mix of sort of his history and this first case and, you know, street crime and the, you know, the injustice of the situation he's in. Really, really nice art that by Bilquis Evely, possibly.
Sure.
That is reminiscent of sort of Steve Dillon stuff. I really liked the first couple issues of this, and then I decided to wait for the trade to read the whole thing. And I really like this thing. I, to be honest, have not finished reading the trade. Maybe it becomes terrible by the end, but I don't think that's the case.
He's fighting Frankenstein in the last one.
I was looking forward to it. It also has a big. Cover gallery at the back of all the variant covers, and a little talk about the design of the character and why they designed the way they did for the comic, and some script pages and little backup stuff.
It's actually, a lot of nice extra stuff.
Yeah, it's a solid little trade, and if you like crime stuff or if you like Shaft,
yeah.
I recommend it.
You know, what I thought was interesting about that when I was reading it was that Shaft is not the full blown badass that he kind of is in the movie.
No,
he's getting there. He's got some of that down, but he's running up against some rough guys early on.
This is very much a Shaftier one style story.
Yeah.
And we talked about it at the time. It's like serious crime comic.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
it doesn't have a ton of much humor to it or dark humor to it. It's straight up crime.
Yeah.
Race. It's dark humor. The joke just jumped out.
Also, I want to mention, this is written by David Walker, right?
Yeah, who is currently doing Cyborg for
but
DC.
But he's about to do something for Marvel, isn't he?
He is, and I'm blanking on what it is.
He's not doing Black Panther, is he?
No, it's not Black Panther, but it is something big, and I was interested in it.
Yeah, me too,
but
I don't remember what it is.
Well,
yeah.
Keep an eye on this.
I really like Shaft as well, so I would also endorse this particular periodical.
No, you get your own pick.
Okay, I do have a pick.
Speaking of your pick, what is it?
My pick is one of the weirder ones I've picked lately. This is also, it's a graphic novel. It is a piece from Junji Ito, who is the manga guy behind Gyo and Uzumaki. He does really creepy Japanese horror manga. But this is something off the beaten path for him. It's a story about his cats.
This really is aimed right at you, Dave. It combines two things you love: horror and cats.
Yes, it's semi autobiographical, sort of a spoof of his own pitfalls. And sort of he's self confessed, sort of more of a dog guy whose wife talked him into a cat when they bought their first home together. The title of the thing is Junji Ito's Cat Diary: Yon and Moo.
Yep.
Those are the names of the cats. That's Y-O-N and M-U. And so essentially the central conceit of this, which is probably about maybe 10 or 12 vignette stories, is that he sort of lenses everything through the kind of macabre horror style that you know him from his other manga. And you can see it. His art still has a slightly creepy look to it, even in this. But so when he sees the cat at first, he's like, you know, its face is hideous, and he's just not like used to cats. But it's drawn in like this creepy style for some of the panels, and his reactions are these very. It becomes very comical though, because he starts seeing everything about the cat as scary and weird, and his reactions when he will like flail around, his eyes will bulge out. You see his wife has one of those like little sort of wiffle. Things, you know, with the feather rod
yeah,
thing
sure,
and everything
yep.
that the cats play with. And when he tries to do it, he just, like, spastically, you know, flips it all over the place. And she's like, no, no. She's like, that's not right. She's like, you got to do it. Gently get their attention and then play with them. And he, you know, he tries it again, and his, like, eyes bulge out, his veins are popping out, and he's like, ah! So it is ridiculous. It is kind of creepy, but, like, in a darkly, very, very funny way. It is a comedic piece, for sure.
I honestly don't think Junji Ito can do it, any sort of thing without letting the horror creep into it a little bit.
I think that's true. Like some manga do, there's little interstitials between the chapters in this where he answers questions from readers. And they're questions about technique, but sometimes about his life and stuff. And because his wife is drawn in the book, as he's drawn in the book, and he makes himself look all kind of creepy looking too. But, like, his wife is drawn with no pupils. And that's a weird affectation he does with some of his characters. It just kind of gives them these kind of scary mannequin-like faces. And somebody indeed asks, they're like, how does your wife feel about being drawn without eyes? And he's like, well, she doesn't really like it. And he's like, she's asked me to redraw them sometimes and to remove some wrinkles from her face. And he's like, but otherwise she seems okay with the book. Anyway, his responses are funny. The book is super, super funny. I was laughing out loud. And it was like, the last really good cat comic I read was What's Michael, which was also a manga.
15 years ago.
No, that was like 8 or 9 years ago.
Okay. It's been a while since it's been in print,
though. But it's been a while since
it's too bad.
Been in print. Yeah, I still think Dark Horse needs to do an omnibus edition of all of it.
Or someone needs to print What's Michael again.
But I think this is a pretty niche kind of thing. I think people who just like cats would enjoy it, though. I don't think you need to know about his horror thing. He makes it clear the horror stuff from the beginning is how it's going to be lensed. But I loved it. Like, I'm gonna for sure buy this copy, but I'm gonna leave it out on the shelf for the week so that y'all can buy it first. I'll order myself another copy this weekend.
All right, Dave, what's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is also a graphic novel or a trade paperback. It's the third volume of the Batman Adventures comic.
So glad these are in print.
Yeah, I was flipping through this, and I was particularly reminded of how much I liked it. This is just randomly issues 21 through 27. This is a series that, when it was coming out, just as the TV show, I felt that Batman the Animated Series was the best persistent vision of Batman, really, that I'd ever seen. Like, you know, I love Batman Year One, but that's a four-issue thing.
Right.
I've never read, like, 20 or 30 or 50 issues of Batman in a row where I'm like, man, every one of these is on fire until I saw the animated series. But they had a comic that was not read as much, but I felt was the equal of the series, and that was this is the comic. Now, the big winner in this issue for me is the reprint of the annual, where they had a bunch of other artists draw stories. I think they were all written by Paul Dini wrote the stories. But, like, Bruce Timm drew the first one, and this was before he did Mad Love.
Yep.
Roxy Rocket was introduced in this one.
Right.
There's some great art, and my favorite story from Mike Parabek is a story about the ventriloquist trying to go straight and getting a little happy frog puppet on, like, a children's television show. It was clearly a Pee-wee's Playhouse analog.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Scarface, you know, his evil ventriloquist starts to return. And he actually is like his dueling personalities of his evil side through Scarface, and like I think the thing's name is like Redeep or something like that, or something really goofy and cute, and they're like fighting mannequins with him. But there's a Harley story from I think Dan DiCarlo from Archie Comics.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Klaus Janson draws one that was a creepy scarecrow story. John Byrne does a good Joker story in this. And it was just an amazing annual. And then the other thing is, as I'm flipping through this, I'm reminded again, I love Mike Parabek.
Yeah.
He was the artist who sadly passed away young, I think from diabetes.
Yeah.
But this is the rest of the stuff after that annual is mostly him. And I love his stuff just as much as, like, sort of Bruce Timm and the other guys. He was a really inspirational artist for me at the time. Interestingly, by the way, there's a Superman team up in this. Before this was long before they would do the animated.
Oh, this is issue 25, isn't it?
Yep, and it has Superman with the long hair.
It's mullet Superman
style of the time. Yeah, yep. When they eventually did do a cartoon with the two of them, at that point Superman had gotten back to his classic cut. But in this one, mullet Superman but animated style.
Yeah.
Superman meets animated Batman. Anyway, love the stories, and I'll definitely be, even though I have the single issues, I'll be picking up the collection.
Yeah, really good. Nick, what's your cheater pick?
I have a new Vertigo book.
Vertigo? But it's not Marvel.
I know. Neither of my picks are Marvel this week. What are you going to do? This is a new number one called Art Ops. It's by Sean Simon, which I'm not as an author. I'm
he
not
familiar wrote,
with.
He wrote Prophet, the oh. Image Prophet book.
Okay, but it has art by Mike Allred, which I'm super familiar with, and is probably the big reason I wanted to read this.
Hey, check that. You know, that was Simon Roy. I don't know who Sean Simon is either.
All right. Well, Randy doesn't know anything. No. But this is sort of about a organization that keeps art, which is actually really alive, safe from the world, and also the world safe from art.
They're not special ops, they're...
Art ops.
Exactly. And it's sort of about a family that is involved in this. There's a woman who's in charge of it, whose son gets involved in it. It's very odd and off the beaten path, like you would expect.
Very Mike Allred.
I think you should describe, Nick, what occurs in the opening scene.
Yeah, the opening scene is pretty good.
It'll tell you a little bit about the book.
The opening scene is about rescuing the real Mona Lisa out of her painting.
That is to say, they take the original woman,
yes, the Mona Lisa out of the painting and replace it with a fake.
Yeah, a fake person, a person who goes in and poses as Mona Lisa.
Because every piece of art is actually alive, living and breathing.
Right. So this book has several conceits going on.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's very odd, very, like you said, Mike Allred.
If you're an artistic person, this kind of thing, if you like fine art and that kind of thing, and Mike Allred and weirdness, this book is aimed at you.
Yep. And of course, there's nefarious things about something going against the organization, so... It had a lot of things that just immediately jumped out at me. And the main character, which is the son of the head of the art ops, is kind of like a jerk and, you know, dumbass. He doesn't want to do anything.
Is this the lead guy, though?
Yeah, he is.
Do you feel that he will have an arc in which he kind of activates, sort of like Jack Knight?
Yeah, because
back to Starman.
There's something that occurs to him, and a part of his body is replaced with art, essentially.
Yeah.
And
some weird but cool stuff.
Yeah, and he obviously is going to have a character arc that leads him into certain things, but I don't know, there was a lot in this world that that Simon introduced that I thought was very interesting.
It seems like some fun ideas at work. I'm going to definitely check this out. By the way, Allred's art, I don't know if we specifically said this, but he is the guy who drew iZombie, which would go on to become a very successful show.
But he also
right now
drew Ecstatic and a bunch of other things.
Which began as X-Force.
Yep.
Madman was his famous independent creation.
Yep.
But if you like the opening sequence of iZombie, that's the artist who does it.
Exactly. Yes. Randy, you have a cheater pick?
My cheater pick is also a trade. This is a book it's a long time coming because
we're shaking things up this week.
This is Robbie Thompson and Stacy Lee's Silk, which is the female Peter Parker, Sydney Moon, who has all the sort of Spider-Man powers and was in a vault for 20 years or whatever and gets out as part of Spider-Verse and now has to go try and find her lost family and also fight supervillains. Has a really cool sort of manga-y style art. I really like this art. This is the artist we have for All Ages event.
Yeah.
She was really nice, really talented. And this is sort of a mixture of sort of, you know, a 20-something girl trying to get along in a world she's not really known and running up against the Black Cat and at the same time looking for her family and trying to be a new superhero. And really, really enjoyed this. Glad to see it all. It's all collected in one volume here. They call it Volume Zero because the regular series, of course, is going to start up in a couple weeks here.
Yeah, and the regular series, based on the preview we saw in Amazing Spider-Man a few weeks back, looks like it has some really neat twists on it.
Yeah,
So there's a cool sort of slight new hook to this one. So this is your chance to get in on board before the new series launches.
Exactly.
Also on my reading stack this week, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 1, which is basically just more Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Same creative team, same vibe.
Same Squirrel Time.
Same Squirrel Time, except she's an Avenger now and is a teleporter. And this is the one where she and her roommate meet her mom, and her mom is everybody as fun as you'd imagine. Spider-Man 2099 number 2, we all liked that first issue. There's a dark twist that happens at the end of number 1, and unfortunately they do continue with that in this ish. So if you're liking sort of the lighter fun tone, I'm sad to say that tone is gone. If you like Peter David's darker stuff, or we're really looking forward to Spider-Man 2099, like getting into his new suit and using some cool technology and doing Spidey stuff, that is very much what's happening here. There's also a new robotics villain that they introduced, who I thought was kind of cool. I like it, but I don't love it as much as the first, like, fun tone that the first one had.
Right. It does sometimes veer dark.
Yeah, this is more of his darker stuff. Kane and the Last Padawan, number 7, starts a new story arc. It is another flashback to his early days. This is how Kanan, then called Caleb Doom, met his Jedi Master and became her Padawan. And it is, as always, written by Greg Weisman, the executive producer of Rebels, and is pretty fun. And then the latest issue of Chew, number 51, which we are 9 issues from the end of Chew. This is the first part of the penultimate story arc, and it is 2 years later, and it's Chew. So I can't possibly describe what happens except to say that it's bonkers.
But Randy sent me some pages, and they were bonkers, in not all the best ways.
I have to say, the cover of that is probably one of my favorite covers this week. I don't know why.
Chocolate Easter Bunny with the FDA badge?
Yeah. The melting...
I have to say, that is not a comic book cliche.
No.
I cannot imagine many comic books with a picture of an Easter basket on it and a chocolate bunny with an FDA badge.
Yeah, nobody looks at Chew and goes, that again?
Yep.
That's true.
You get punched.
Nick, what else is on your list?
I have the first issue of Angela, Queen of Hell.
So she's the queen of the Asgardian underworld now?
Indeed. All right. She is. Okay. I have not read this, Hellboy and the BPRD 1953.
Cool.
But it's Mignola and... Art by a guy named Ben Stenbeck.
Looks like it might be two stories, The Phantom Hand and The Kelpie.
Yes, there's two stories in here. It's more Hellboy.
Early Hellboy. Yep.
Early Hellboy. Another issue of Fight Club 2. The insanity keeps getting more insane.
Yep.
Because, you know, it has to.
What I noticed about this one is I like this cover on it.
Sort of the Napoleon.
Is that David Mack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a traditional picture of Napoleon, but he's got, like, the burn on his hand from the acid and the style of it. And the map behind him that, you know, shows, like, his plan for world conquest has things like self-help therapy, you know, is like, one of the countries. And it seems like Project Mayhem is one of the others. It's sort of like the country as his brain.
Yeah.
The first issue of Howling Commanders of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is the sort of new Creature Commandos book from Marvel that is a...
Dum Dum Dugan leading a bunch of monsters.
Yes, and...
Who writes that?
It's...
Frank Barbieri.
Where do I know him from?
I don't know. He's done a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Barbieri.
It was a lot of fun, and it puts together a team of characters that are crazy. It includes, like, Hitmonkey and Zombie Jasper Sitwell.
And Gugam Son of Goom.
Because why not?
Yep.
Second issue of the New Avengers, which I liked quite a bit. It was nice to see that the first arc was just 2 issues, and they finished that up.
Same thing with Cap, actually, which you're about to talk about.
Yep, and Captain America, or Sam Wilson, Captain America number 2, again, is a 2-issue opening arc. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it's of a piece with the first issue, which we all really liked.
Yeah, and I really have to say that Daniel Acuna's artwork is gorgeous.
Yeah, Acuna's doing a really nice job.
Yeah, I was not a big fan of his to start with, but over the years he's really won me over.
He changed. There was a definitive change in his style at some point, and he went away from the sort of more plasticine looking figures to there's still a slightly geometric look to his figures, even though it's this painted look now. But I feel like they feel much more natural.
In the second issue, they introduced, in the first issue, sort of the anti-immigrant Sons of the Serpent.
Yeah.
In this one, they do sort of an Edward Snowden kind of thing. So. Yeah, right.
But I also want to say that the reason the second issue won me over is the interaction between Sam and Steve.
And Steve, yeah.
And their conversations actually felt very original and real. So
yeah, I like that too.
I was happy with how Nick Spencer was able to handle that.
Given that at the end of the first issue, it looked like, you know...
They were just going to come to blows.
Yeah, they were like, he's like, I'm taking you in, or stand down,
or whatever. It felt sort of just like very adversarial.
And then this kind of reined that back in a little bit and got him into a more character. I mean, that's a cliffhanger ending.
It's meant to be.
By the way, and I don't want to spoil the characters, but there are 2 more characters in here that are heavy refs on the Grimwald Cap.
Yep.
And I'm real, and that's like my golden. That's my golden age of Cap. And
it's
so
to take an era of Captain America and sort of.
Spencer is drawing on my favorite era of Cap.
I realize you're talking about one of the villains.
Yep.
I don't know the other.
I'll tell you after.
Yeah, tell me afterwards.
Then there's the second issue of Star Wars Chewbacca, which, you know, a standalone Chewie story I wasn't really in the market for.
Yeah.
But I like what Gary Dugan has done with it. I know, it's very sad, Chewie. I just
no, that was Chewie saying. That was Chewie saying, "You shut your mouth."
Oh, okay. Well,
you don't speak Wookiee.
My Wookiee is really, really just not that great.
You need a C-3PO.
Exactly, I do need a C-3PO. But I'm liking the story so far. I think Phil Noda's artwork is just gorgeous.
Yep.
And I have to say, I'm just flipping through it, and I see Chewbacca hitting somebody with a gonk droid.
That's really all I want.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually thought that was one of the best ones.
Yeah, sorry.
But then there is the 13th issue of Grayson, which I just love Grayson.
I still love Grayson, too.
I kind of want old Nightwing back, but I like Spy Nightwing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And sort of seeing him deal with problems, but also we're getting... I think Tim Seeley does a great job with his characters, and not only are we getting a great Grayson,
yeah.
but seeing Tim Drake used in the way
I was so
Drake
happy with Tim Drake here.
Supposed to be used.
Yeah.
I'm like, that he's a hacker.
He is like super,
he's a super hacker,
extraordinary.
And detective.
And detective. Yep. And I'm like, this is what people should do. Get Tim Seeley to do a Red Robin book.
That
or
made
something.
Me so happy. Yeah, he was still...
redeem a character who has not been, I think, super well loved in the New 52.
He's still in the terrible New 52 Red Robin costume, but he is real. He feels more like Tim Drake.
Yeah.
And also, he's doing a great job using the Wildcat stuff
again,
and the Wildstorm stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my god, this person is being used?
It fits
it's
perfectly.
It's not just Midnighter,
right, like
it's somebody
been there
else.
For the planning stage
yes.
when they launched New 52
yep.
to, like, how to integrate all
he,
of the...
He gets it in the same way that Joe Casey and Alan Moore did.
Yeah, and... kudos to Tim Seeley for writing 13 issues of Fantastic, and I can't wait to see
don't
what comes
forget
more.
His buddy.
Tom King.
And Tom King, that's right.
And Mikael Janin's art is fantastic.
Oh, God, Mikael Janin's art.
Yeah,
I'm very impressed with the you know, that level of output from Janin. I was also going to say that Grayson, it strikes me a little bit like the Superior Spider-Man stuff, where we were like, I don't know if we want this
yeah.
early on, but then when it hit, I was like, I could run with this for a few years. This
yep.
is that
yep.
good. And then when it's all said and done, it's going to make for like a great several collections,
yep.
you know? So
I have all of Superior Spider-Man on my
so
shelf.
It is. I am now oh. long past being sort of won over
yeah.
to its kind.
Grayson is the DC book I'm still reading.
the handful of other books in my stack here are the second issue of Wild's End, which, you know, I picked the trade last week, and
yep.
I've been enjoying the follow-up series. There's a new issue of Batgirl, which... I noticed she's been interacting a lot more with the DC Universe sort of.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Now, and in this case, it looks like Grayson is, in fact, in this.
Oh,
issue.
Nice. Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on, but he's in it.
But you get a Babstar drawn Grayson. So
yeah,
that's pretty
true.
Awesome.
That's true. Let's see. There's a new issue of We Are Robin. So also on the Batman front. And finally, I have to mention this latest Sinestro. If only for the variant cover. Now, actually, I think that the story inside might well appeal to me because I read I think the previous issue, and it followed the recruitment of a new Sinestro Corps guy through, you know, what it's like to join the Sinestro Corps and
yeah.
be trained by them. And I really liked the issue. It's Cullen Bunn writing, but what makes this issue stand out is the variant cover for their DC's Monster Month. Not really a monster in the traditional classic
no,
movie
but, you know.
Sense, but more in the it's Sinestro as Grumpy Cat
yep.
way. It is literally Sinestro as Grumpy Cat.
This meme text on the front.
Yeah, it's done up in the precise style of a Grumpy Cat meme with the small text above and the text below. If you're on our store's Facebook or Instagram, I posted on both of them today to get the image out there. But it's pretty amazing. And in the wake of the Zoot Suit Sinestro from a few months ago, I feel that Sinestro is dominating when it comes to variant covers. And I want DC to run with this. I want him to get all the best and craziest ones. Anyway, that's my picks. Those
all right.
are my other ones.
That wraps up Comics of the Week. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about some movies and TV and more Halloween stuff. All right, so I believe we talked about this. I never went back and researched, but Nick and I are pretty sure that we talked extensively about Supergirl back when the pilot leaked.
Actually, you and I think that Nick said he wasn't 100% sure.
That's true.
Oh, vice versa.
Right. Yes.
You guys are both the same to me.
But we are exactly the same person. We were split from the same zygote.
Anyway, you're either about to hear a lot of the stuff we've already covered several months ago or a fresh new discussion of Supergirl.
Yeah.
Because Supergirl, the pilot,
it aired
on Monday night. Its regular slot is going to be on Tuesday, starting, I believe, next week. We all liked it.
Yeah.
And a review.
Actually, I will take that from like to love. I thought
really?
It was really good.
I think it's a solid pilot with some great moments. And I think there's potential for it to be a great show.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Randy. I felt like the writing needs to kind of punch up a little bit, cohere just a bit. But as like a premiere, knowing that it's going to need to find its feet a little bit, I really liked it, and I revisited it last night. I don't think there was any difference between this and like the sort of the screener
yeah.
that we saw some months ago. But I think if anything, I did enjoy it more the second time through. That upbeat tone does wonders for me.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Superman fan, and although I like bits and pieces of Smallville, it never quite scratched the itch I wanted it to.
Yeah.
And the movies have been a little too dark for me, or in the case of like Superman Returns, like 10 years ago or whatever, a little too reverential, honestly, to the Richard Donner movie, which I loved.
Yeah,
but I just don't want to return to it necessarily.
Yeah,
this gives me. I mean, it's Supergirl, not Superman.
Yeah.
But it's a better Superman type of story than I've seen almost anywhere else for the last 10 years.
I was going to say, it does in one episode what Smallville couldn't do in 12 seasons.
Yeah.
And show, put her in a suit and show her doing superhero things.
That's one thing I want to talk about. I've seen people say they think it's too much packed into the pilot. And I think that's one of the strengths of the show is that the first 15 minutes, we have the inciting incident where she basically saves the plane and uses her powers and does cool stuff. And we also get introduced to her workplace and all. Like, they introduce the whole show in 15 minutes.
That's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive. And then they bring in the DEO. They have a fight with a supervillain.
It's a good
they have
fight, a little, too. I gotta say.
They have a fun little montage set to, what was the music? It's great. It's not Brick House, but it's something of a piece with that.
Like
that. Bad Mamma Jamma.
Yes,
it's
the equivalent in a way of the scene in the first Christopher Reeve Superman movie where you see a montage of him fighting crime when he first goes to Metropolis.
And they do some cool stuff, and they show her using her powers. And I thought that they did a great job of sort of they definitely hit a little heavy on she's a girl and she's a hero who's for girls, and I think that's okay. You really want to remember, because it's important, because it is something we don't see.
Right.
Yeah. A female-led superhero TV show. This is new, and it's important.
It was so new that all Jeb Bush could possibly say was that she was hot.
Did you see Melissa Benoist, the Supergirl?
She had a sort of
great response to it, yeah.
I forget what she said, but yeah.
She feels very genuine, and she comes across as a really good Supergirl.
She's the best part of the show, I think. Getting her is as important as getting Grant Gustin for Flash or Stephen Amell's Arrow.
She has a lot of energy and charisma on the screen.
You know what? It's interesting. I saw a review from NPR who I think they've been somewhat generous like with Flash and other stuff maybe, but their review of this was like, you know, new Supergirl almost fails to take off or whatever.
Yeah.
And their approach was weird to me, like as just, I guess, it just felt alien. They felt that she was a really boring character and the only time the show was interesting was when Calista Flockhart was on screen. And by contrast,
I think Calista Flockhart's cartoonish.
I thought she was kind of cartoonish.
Deliberately so. I mean, I think that's fine.
Yeah, we already saw, we kind of know some bits and pieces from the season to come, just from their little trailer for it. And I think she will be a sort of fun foil for the character.
Yeah.
Kind of more like Perry White if he was kind of an a-hole.
But she's very much sort of channeling the Meryl Streep character from Devil Wears Prada.
Well, and the Jane Fonda character from Newsroom.
Yes.
Right. But it struck me as weird as that being the one good thing. I was like, I like it okay. She's slightly cartoonish. But
I like Calista Flockhart because I like Calista Flockhart.
She's great
here. I like her, all right.
One thing I want to say about Benoist that I thought, in addition to being a great Supergirl, she's a great Kara.
Yeah.
Her secret identity game reminds me of what Christopher Reeve did, where you believe that people wouldn't immediately think, oh, that's Supergirl.
Right. But she pulls off a certain mousiness.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that she doesn't keep it secret very long for few people.
Yeah.
Right. You know what? I was looking at some comments on the message boards today, which, as we all know,
don't ever do that. Possible. Don't ever do that.
Absolutely terrible. Because I liked the show, and I was like, I know I'm going to run into haters straight away. And first of all, the first one I saw was somebody saying, like, you know, how dumb can this chick be? She gets powers, and the first thing she does is tell someone. And I'm like, hey, the old secret identity trope is wearing thin.
Yeah.
You can only run that plot for – you can only see people make excuses to their loved ones so many times. And this is a close friend.
Yeah.
And also – it's like telling your best friend.
Yeah, of course you
if
would.
If you have powers and you – you would tell somebody. You would have to. Yeah. I would tell you guys.
Well, I think. Wait, do you have something to tell us?
No. I would like to.
What's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to go after her cousin.
Yeah.
in for a shot.
My prediction is that by mid-season, Calista Flockhart's character will know. If they follow the pattern that they've been doing, that she'll know her identity.
Because I could see that.
Because the pattern of Flash and Arrow and the other shows is
your workplace friends.
You start to give more of it. You start to give the identity more away, and the reason is it makes more sense. It's We saw they held on to the thing with Iris for so long that it was ridiculous.
Well, you know, a ways back, Randy, just as a kind of fun thought exercise, remember when we were redesigning DC, like if we had done the New 52 or one of those? And my notion for Superman at the time was I would have his best friends at the Daily Bugle, or Daily Planet. So Perry, Jimmy, and Lois would know the deal. Yeah. And they would always be on the watch for stuff. Yeah. They'd call him when they need him, and they'd help him figure things out, and they would be kind of his closest friends, his tight-knit family kind of. And I liked that effect. It was a great idea for Flash.
Hey, in my little thing, everyone knew who Clark Kent was. He was a celebrity.
So you were ahead of the game.
You predicted DC.
I also like – I think their effects are good. Like, the flight effects are really good, and that's important because that's as important as getting speed right for Barry.
Yep.
Yet it's going to be used so much.
Yep.
And their flight effects are really good. Their action effects were good. I saw some people, like, misunderstanding, maybe even willfully misunderstanding some of the stuff. Like, there's a bit where in the big fight – and spoilers here, where she's like, she does a thing like, stop fighting, I don't want to die. And people are like, oh, because she's a girl. And I'm like, that was a ruse.
Really? Like, that was like a transparent sort of like, when...
They could not have made it clear that was a ruse, but a lot of people who didn't like the show, maybe they already were out of it and they weren't noticing, but I'm like, she wasn't actually like turning into a weak girl and saying, no, don't hurt me, big, strong alien man. Like, that is the weirdest interpretation of that scene.
Yeah, that's
bizarre. People who want to find flaws.
Yeah.
I figure so, or they're simpletons.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the people are not getting, a lot of people who don't like it, and not everyone, people can legitimately not like this. You're wrong, but that's okay.
I did feel like you can legitimately say the acting is, the characters are somewhat broadly sketched.
Sure.
It's a bit larger than
the
life.
Music's a little much.
Right. It's kind of, it's either a little maybe too jaunty or a little too heroic at times.
Yeah.
But I'd rather it be airing on that side than on doom and gloom side.
Agreed.
And as it is, though, I feel like the threat in it, who is a threat in the comics, is a joke character.
Yeah.
And although he wasn't in particularly...
No, it's just name only, basically.
But he's become a joke character over the years. But they made him a serious threat. And I feel like he felt dangerous to her. They showed that she will take some punches. And that's, honestly, with a notable female superhero character, I'm like... I wasn't sure if they were going to, especially with a lighter tone show overall.
Yeah.
Are they going to have her get beat up the way Flash and Arrow get beat up sometimes?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like egregious or anything, but, she took some punches.
Saw people griping about that too, saying, oh, she gets beat up because she's a girl. And I'm like, you guys watching Flash and Arrow?
Yeah, no, it was.
This
it was
is the pattern.
If the villains don't dish out some danger, then what good are they?
Yeah.
I liked him as a threat, and her dealing with it became, that much more dramatic. I was like, oh, these guys are going to be serious customers, because I wasn't sure how serious the show would be.
Yeah.
And I think some people thought, it was going to be a rom-com type thing.
Yeah.
But it's an action-adventure show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like The Flash, maybe with a little bit more rom-com percolating.
A little bit, but not so much more. I mean, he had the whole thing with Iris and all that.
There's some rom-com in
it's
Flash.
True. It's true.
But I also think... really notably, I think that the villain twist at the end is it's a new character, and I think that's a really cool twist.
It is.
And a way to get used to that out of that actress who I liked and I thought was going to be. And I think that the addition of her sister and putting her with the DEO is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also some neat little Easter eggs, like the guy the director of the DEO is an important name.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And then they released. They
showed, just as in the first episode, you see a monitor of like. The alien threats, which I think we talked about this before, but she is going to largely be dealing with alien threats on Earth.
In the same way that Flash has the metas.
Right. Yeah. And it's a cool hook. There's a precise hook for why they're there. I thought it's a neat idea.
It's a good hook. I liked it too. I've seen some people complain that the name for the prison, why didn't they use like Tacron Galtos or something like that? And they did miss some Easter egg possibilities, but that's not that important.
Yeah, that's minor stuff. There's a monitor screen that flashes and it shows some of the threats on there. And I was like, oh, you asked me if one of the guys...
I thought it was Jem, Son of Saturn. You said it might be Despero. I think either one of us could be right.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if that means they'll show up. It was just sort of a nod.
Right. And then we watch the trailer for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and there's some great little thing. We see Lucy Lane's going to show up.
Yep.
Red Tornado.
Which, by the way, if people don't happen to know, that's Lois's sister.
And more importantly, James Olsen's, girlfriend.
Yep.
Hunky James Olsen. We didn't even talk about Hunky James Olsen, but I love Hunky James Olsen.
Know what I liked about him is he's a straight arrow.
Yeah.
He's absolutely a straight arrow. I don't know. I was almost wondering if he was too much so.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't really see any flaws with this guy. He's hunky.
But then you realize that he lied to Kara about knowing her identity. And you're like, he's a liar. That's his flaw.
Yeah, that's true. You know, if you're Superman's best friend and you know his secret identity and stuff like that, yeah, you got to cover for him sometimes. You got to learn to lie.
Well, that's the thing. I think I buy this guy as someone who could be Superman's best friend.
Yep.
He's not a guy who would always need saving. He's a guy who's a straight arrow and a good guy. And you could see where Superman would see something in him.
And there was also no snark at Superman.
Right.
When she says, what, you know, she asks what he's like or whatever.
Yeah.
She knows him. But
she does, but...
Maybe she's like, what's it like working with him or being his best friend?
And he says
like,
it's everything you'd imagine, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I appreciate Superman being treated, I thought, not very, very strongly, but not reverentially.
Yeah.
Like there, this could have been one of those things where it's like, she's never going to measure up.
Yeah.
And it feels like she's going to measure up.
Yeah, I agree. So anyway, we liked that. Real quick, I wanted to mention, since it was Back to the Future Day last week.
Yeah.
Have you guys revisited back? Did you revisit, Dave?
Yeah, I rewatched the first one, and I started rewatching the second one, was reminded I don't like it. I'm going to power through it so I can get to the third one and finally know the conclusion to what it was overall a very well-liked trilogy.
What's funny is Back to the Future 2 is a weaker movie, absolutely. But that's where all the Back to the Future stuff comes from.
Right, like all the lore kind
of. All the future stuff comes from Back to the Future 2. Like the first one's all set in the 50s.
Yeah, it's true, but it is the one that made the thing great.
Yeah.
If people have seen only one, it's always the first one.
But two has the hoverboard and the...
The hoverboard, the holographic Jaws, the 2015, everything that they reference. Yeah.
You know, one of our longtime customers, Dan Nguyen, he posted an article the other day that was... it was from IO9 or something like that, that said that there was an analysis of the first Back to the Future saying that it's basically a perfect movie, kind of a flawlessly constructed, every scene builds on the next, all of them are meaningful in the big scheme of things and clever on their own. And I do tend to agree with that. I feel it's kind of right up there with like Princess Bride as far as like just about perfect.
Although, as we know, screenwriter Bob Gale, who is doing the Back to the Future comic, has some weird tics.
He does have some weird
tics. Because even Back to the Future, perfect movie or not, does have the weird incest thing.
Yeah.
And there's some weirdness to everything Bob Gale writes.
Right. It's just that I think it was sort of a little bit like sort of George Lucas
and
the original Star Wars movies. He was surrounded by so many good people.
Yeah.
You know, like great director.
Yeah, Robert Zemeckis.
Great special effects.
Yeah.
Hugely awesome cast.
Yeah.
And they brought it all to life so that it still feels kind of innocent and fun.
Yeah.
Even though... You know what's funny? There's more swearing than I remembered.
Oh, yeah.
So a little bit of that 80s edge to it.
Yep.
There's some adult humor in there, and there's his mom trying to mac on him.
Yep.
So it's weird.
See, Back to the Future 2 for me, I really liked it, and I like it more every time I watch it. I have the opposite reaction that you do, because I like the future stuff. I like the alternate timeline stuff, because I always love alternate timelines. I love Biff as Donald Trump.
which the screenwriter, as much as said, he literally
outright said,
was
yes.
based on
it. I like sort of the almost post-apocalyptic vibe they give it, and the principal being like a shooting guns at slackers.
Yeah.
And then the third one, which Dave has not seen, is all Western, and I like the Western stuff.
Yeah. I think the third one is probably the weakest for me.
Me too, but it's got moments I like.
It does have
That's
great
funny,
moments.
That's funny, because I know people who like seem to really like the third one.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think the third one is stronger than the second. And I don't necessarily agree with that.
I assume it was kind of like that third Indiana Jones thing where it just sort of felt like family at that point.
Yeah.
And like the Old West, you know. Yeah.
And it's more focused. The second one does jump around to three different time periods. They go back to the 50s, they have the alternate 80s, and then they have the future 2015, whereas it's all in the Old West in Back to the Future 3, so it feels more like Back to the Future.
Right.
But I dig all three movies. I'm glad it's back, and there is a comic which we're out of now, but we'll have more next couple weeks.
I know they're all streaming on Amazon at the moment.
Yeah, yep.
I also liked all of the there were some fun little tributes. What's his name? Doc Brown, Christopher Lloyd, doing a message to everybody about how the future didn't turn out like they thought.
And then they showed up on Jimmy Kimmel,
and that was a fun bit. I was a little sad Christopher Lloyd clearly losing it on a few lines.
A little bit. Well, Michael J. Fox also has sort of the weird facial tics. And
sure.
It's hard not to notice that both of them have gotten older.
Right. Yeah. That said, the Jimmy Kimmel bit is overall still lots of fun, and there's some very good bits in it, so I recommend it.
And then there's, of course, the Toyota ad where they play themselves, meeting a guy who's created a hydrogen-powered car.
Yeah.
So.
I enjoyed the kind of spate of Back to the Future posts I saw on Facebook and all over the
Yep.
celebrations all last week for a good movie.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of movies, good and not, depending on who you talk to at this table.
Right.
We all been watching a little bit of horror movies.
Yes,
that's
true.
Dave, you want to talk about Lake Mungo?
Yeah, Lake Mungo was easily my favorite horror movie I've seen this year. It is not new. It's an Australian film that came out, I think, in like 2008 or something like that. And it is found footage of a sort. It's more like a documentary that almost might have been constructed like after all the events. It's like interviews with the people who were the participants in it after the fact, which
yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen a found footage movie that quite does that.
No, it felt more like a real documentary.
Yeah, although there was not a narration. It was just literally scenes and then occasionally interviews.
It was interviews and footage and that kind of thing.
Footage,
and this is not available streaming. This is, you have to rent it somewhere.
Yeah, I rented that one. I know that, you know, there's like a Netflix of horror movies that a friend of mine is trying to
okay.
I mean, you can buy it off of Amazon or whatever, Apple TV for like $3.
Okay,
I looked.
Okay.
So there's options. But the short version of it, it's sort of a middle class family in Australia. Their daughter goes missing. I mean, she actually didn't go missing. She drowns.
Yeah.
In the months that follow this tragic event, which, you know, is treated very, very seriously and grimly, though there starts to come under question of whether the body that turned up was actually her. And there also seem to be these strange sightings, in like photographs and stuff taken in around their homes, of like a shadowed figure that may be her. It seems like,
or her ghost,
And it takes several twists and turns after that. There's some interesting things revealed. It's sort of a psychological drama, And there were times in it where I was watching it, I was like, okay, I think there's like no real supernatural element here. And then there were times where I'm like, okay, there clearly is. Mm-hmm. And then I would suddenly backpedal again. I'd be like, wait, well, maybe not. Oh, and that's a weird new wrinkle. Anyway, I found it was very satisfying for me. It's on the creepy side of things. There's not a single jump scare in the whole movie.
Right.
So I recommend if you want sort of a horror that would sort of kind of gets under your skin. Or you know, if you like psychological horror.
Yeah, for me, I discovered as I was watching this that I like stuff that's like that's supernatural and gets the supernatural. Like, I want to know whether it is or isn't.
Yeah.
And the sort of teasing of it kind of drove me a little crazy.
This one is one of those where, like, you won't really get full answers until the – you do get some answers, though.
Yeah.
It's not so mysterious that you don't get nothing, but you'll know at the end.
Yeah.
And I found it a satisfying reveal.
And the movie that I watched that I loved was one that was recommended to me, which is Taking of Deborah Logan, which is on Netflix, which I believe, Dave, you were not as into.
You know, I'm a sucker for found footage movies.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
I really like the genre when it's done well, and I like more than other people do. I know some people just hate the genre.
Yeah.
But I find, like, when it's done right, it has sort of a high degree of... It feels weirdly real to me.
Yeah.
I find that really cool.
This felt more slick and produced?
A little bit. I felt like just a touch more than I like. And that said, I watched about 20 minutes of it. It wasn't quite clicking with me, but it wasn't like terrible or anything, so I'm probably going to watch the rest of it.
Yeah, it wasn't so much a found footage. It was about a group coming in to do a sort of retrospective
it's like a college like grad student documentary, and I don't want to say too much about this because I went in pretty blind, and that's the way to go into this. Like, just know that it's sort of highly recommended by a lot of my horror aficionado friends.
Yeah.
But it's a young documentary crew, like a grad student and her two like friends, and they come in to do a documentary on a woman who has Alzheimer's, early stage Alzheimer's.
And I do think this is a very cool premise.
And it is her daughter is the one who's like getting the money for it, and it's like at their house, and they need the money from the film crew to keep the house. So her mom is sort of reluctantly going along with it. And the daughter is played by the flaky sister from Mad About You.
Yes.
And she's great in this.
Yeah.
I was really surprised at how good she was in this sort of dramatic role. But there's like an older neighbor. And I won't get into much of it, but there's definitely more. There's a supernatural twist, and there is more to it than Alzheimer's. And it is – they have everything – it's found footage in that everything has a camera. Like, there are cameras installed in the house.
Right.
They always have cameras with them. Like, there's always a point-of-view camera.
Essentially, that is what, like, say, Blair Witch was doing.
Yeah.
They were trying to make a documentary in that, and you saw them as they were making
it. Yeah.
And also, like, Last Exorcism, too, notably. Mm-hmm.
This one is on Netflix streaming, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that. But I really like Nick, you liked this one as well?
I did. I very much did. I didn't know quite what to expect because I found it. I didn't hear about it by anybody. Okay. But Kaylee and I, my wife and I, look at random horror movies late at night because we're like, what do we want to watch? And we'll watch whatever random one we find. And that was one of the ones that did. And she fell asleep. So I was sitting there at 2 in the morning watching this.
It's creepy and scary and definitely gets under your skin a bit.
It is very effective.
It's interesting sometimes when they mix stuff that is like a mixture of real world fears, Alzheimer's, with scary ass shit.
Yeah. But definitely worth a look, in my opinion. And then finally, one that I've seen that I watched just last night, but you guys have both already seen. Which is Babadook.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the... Is it Australian or New Zealand?
I feel like it's New Zealand, but I'm not 100% sure.
Anyway.
The people sound funny is the important
thing. Yeah, people sound funny. But this is a sort of haunting book. It is not... Or a haunting movie. It is not a...
It's almost like it could be a psychological drama without the horror, if you took away the horror elements.
Yeah, without giving too much away, but it's basically a mom and her son. The father died like in a car accident when the kid was born, and this is 7 years later, and they're still sort of psychologically scarred by all this. The kid has some sort of hyperactive, maybe something wrong with him. He's a little dangerous to others, and she's just frazzled.
Yeah.
And there's a question of like, is the kid making something up, or is there something going on?
And it all revolves around this book.
This book called The Babadook, which is about it's a scary looking kids book that
a pop-up book.
It's a pop-up book, yeah. It has some scary imagery. And this one grabbed me from the first and then just got creepier and creepier. And then I thought the ending scene was really harrowing. And I mean, if you're promising children in danger, don't watch this.
Yeah. The whole movie felt harrowing to me, so much so that when I saw it with some friends, I'm not going to say they pirated it, but they pirated it so that we could watch it. It was actually the same week it hit at the theater.
Yeah.
I felt bad about that. I try not to do that. And so when my brother wanted to see it, I was like, let's go see it at the theater. And I can give these good people my money because I like this movie.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't know if I can watch this a second time. It's a bit emotionally draining.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, I feel like, oh, this poor family.
Yeah.
They are already having the toughest time possible. The mom is clearly at her wit's end. She's depressed and she's kind of broken. And her son, and you get it.
And she's also, she's lost her support system because basically she spent 7 years leaning on everyone and they're all tired of it. They're all tired of supporting her. So
it's very realistic in its depiction of characters and unflinching.
Yeah.
And it's that way right up through to the ending.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty satisfying ending.
Yeah, I like the end. I really like this one. This is another one that's streaming on Netflix and I've been hearing about it for a while. A lot of my friends like it and I was not disappointed. I really liked it. So that's a few Halloween recommendations. I also know Trick or Treat is on HBO now, so I'm going to try and rewatch that. By the next time you hear us, it will be November, and it will still be fall, but it won't be Halloween anymore. You guys have any last Halloween recommendations for people?
I actually watched Saw, the first one.
Oh, yeah, Saw.
And I've never – I think I stayed away from this because I'm not a big fan of the torture porn genre. And that's what I sort of equated.
I you found what I did.
And that's what I equated this movie with, without having seen it. So
just
bad
assumed.
On me. Yep. I just assumed.
You made an ass out of you and Saw.
I did. but
out of him and Jigsaw.
But I sat down and watched it over the weekend, and I have to say I was very impressed with it. There was more to it. There was a much bigger story.
In many ways, it is not the torture porn at all.
Correct. It's just
it's more psychological.
It's psychological, you know, people trying to figure their way out of, you know, a situation.
Right.
But the people involved.
I just want to say how it begins. Cary Elwes
of Princess Bride.
Of Princess Bride wakes up. Is he in the bathtub?
The other guy is in the bathtub.
They wake up in this room that looks like it was straight out of Seven, you know, with a flickering light. But it looks like a dingy bathroom with, like, tiling and stuff like that and a big mirror.
So like your average bachelor's bathroom.
Yeah. And there is a one of them is in a bathtub and it is chained to like the faucet or something like that. And what's the other guy?
Carol is chained to sort of like a steam pipe or something along the other wall.
They don't remember, as I recall, they don't quite remember how they got there. They don't know what's going on, and there is a dead body in the center of the room with like a pool of blood and like its head
and a
blown open.
Microcassette recorder in one hand and a gun in the other.
Right. And it's like this cool, like, this mystery unfurls. It's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And obviously, it's very much a, what would you do? You're like, there's a tape here. you're going to play the tape and see what it says.
But there's also, you know, police procedural involved in this, because you get characters like Danny Glover, who is sort of investigating who this person who's putting people in these situations is.
And, you know, what's interesting is it sounds a little like, sort of like, not a little growier, but like Myst and those sort of storytelling games where you like got to puzzle out things.
I did think when I was watching it a little bit of like, video games, and not in like a bad way. It was like, it sort of takes that sort of those lessons we've learned from video games. Like, you walk into a room and you see these three objects and you don't know what's going on. What do you do? And you're like, well, here's what I would do first. But, you know, what would you do under much more harrowing circumstances?
Right.
And as Nick notes, there's several storylines. There's flashbacks going on.
Yep.
It is the violence in it. It is a violent movie, but the violence is often portrayed in sort of quick cuts, so it doesn't linger on it. I would not call it torture in that sense.
Well, this just got added to Hulu, so I may have to give this a shot.
It was also on Netflix.
Oh, it was on Netflix as well?
Yeah, okay. And it's directed by James Wan, which is a big deal now because he's done tons of other horror movies that have garnered a lot of praise.
But notably, Insidious.
Conjuring.
The Conjuring.
So let me ask you guys this. Yeah. If I was going to watch Saw or The Conjuring...
Conjuring's probably a slightly better movie.
I still have to say Conjuring.
Okay. I realized I had a digital copy that some good friend of mine gave me.
Oh, that's right.
My personal preference between them would probably slightly be towards Saw.
Really?
The Conjuring I had like a few issues with. Like I kind of do with all of the James Wan movies, but I just feel like his overall batting average is high on the popcorn horror.
Do you guys remember what movie he's doing, James Wan? That we were excited about.
Fast and the Furious, but he's going to do something else.
Yeah, he's up for doing something.
I can't remember.
It's not one of the DC movies, is it?
It's not a Star Wars movie, is it?
It is a Star Wars movie. I'm almost sure of it.
Yeah.
I think he's doing one of the Star Wars movies.
I would hope so.
Or maybe he's doing Aquaman. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll talk about it next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
All right. But that about wraps it up for this week. Until next time. Yo, Joe! And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.